Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Right here on the Absolute Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and it is so great to be here with you today, right here on the Absolute Network, as we continue to do Tom's Prerogative. On this week's episode, we dive right back into anime, and pretty much the rest of this month, I have two names for it. One, say, sort of Funimation, sort of comedy month. Not that this is a planned month or at all, but, our next three titles, as I'll get to later, what the next 2 weeks will be, also, maybe you could say is a Lexis Tipton month, considering that, she plays the female lead in the next three series we'll be reviewing. But, again, I wanted to get back to anime, let's see, we had an entire month, we were covering American anime in the fact that we were covering DC, not American anime and Ultimate Avengers, but definitely with the DC movies, it was definitely American anime. Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker, Superman Doomsday, I guess can be questioned, but definitely Wonder Woman, and definitely without a doubt, considering that Michael Turner's style is the anime style. It was Superman Batman Apocalypse. So, I guess not that long ago, because we did do Big Windup before we started the month, and that was at the end of March. But, we're getting back to covering some anime, and really for the near foreseeable future, I really do see mostly anime as far as what I'll be covering. I may include an American title here or there. Depending on if I get to meet Stan Lee, maybe a special review of Stripperella at some point down the line, but we'll get there when we get there. On to this week. This week's review is Baka and the Test, Summon the Beast, right now licensed by Funimation. This is a glorious comedy anime, and as I look at my notes to when it came out, because if I remember right, it's something that it came out the first season, the first anime season of, let me start that over because I'm sounding very confusing. There are four sort of seasons every year that anime comes out. There is the winter, that's the first one, that starts in January. There's then the spring, summer, and fall. This came out in 2010 as part of the winter season. So this came out along with Angel Beats, and Working, I believe, came out that time. Second season of Kimi no Tsunoke. And I'm saying this because, again, you've heard me say before in the past that 2010 was the best year of anime coming out of Japan since 2004. And I'd say the best year on its own since probably 1998. Because it's so many wonderful animes. And this is what, again, this is how good the year is. There's so many I remember, and yet at the same point in time, there's so many that came out that were good that I actually didn't see. And this is actually one of them. Baka and Test is one I really actually didn't watch. I was watching mostly Kimi no Tanoke and Angel Beats along with some other stuff. I believe the fourth season of Ukitoshi came out at that point. So I was watching that. I believe Ichigo no Damien. It either came out that time or the next, in the spring season. But, you know, I was focused on a lot other things. And this is a pleasant surprise that I missed that I've recently gotten to watch the English version, mind you, on Netflix, which I'm really, really happy about. You know, this is just a fun comedy series, you know? But again, I'm getting more into review there. But again, it's just, it's another one of those pleasant surprises, and it just further proves why the 2010 anime season in Japan was one of the best years in a long time and really changed the direction of where anime was going. You know, from 2005 to 2009, it was really this bad direction where there was very few good quality anime that could be really good sellers. You know, and I know there's a lot of fans out there, they want everything to be this serious and sort of artistic thing, but that doesn't sell DVDs. You know, stuff like Baka and Tass, Summon the Beast, comedies and stuff like that, it does. This is stuff that can be put on TV. This is stuff that can be successful. We'll get to all that later. But yeah, so this definitely part of the season turned a direction around for anime for the good. So, with that, let's get right into the review, mind you. And we have no emails or no comments or no anything like that. Well, we did have one comment on our Facebook page as far as Ultimate Avengers from our good friend Phantom, a.k.a. Stephen Fry, a longtime friend of 132 Productions. It was something along the lines, if I remember right, about, oh my god, I can't believe you're reviewing that awful Ultimate Avengers. You know, Phantom, it just shows you the lengths I'll go through for you, the fans. I torture myself for you. But with that being said, let's get right into cast and synopsis. First, with cast, Josh Grau plays Akihisha Yoshi. Alexis Tipton plays Mizuki Himeji. Leia Clark plays Minami Shimada. Scott Freeman plays Yuji Sakamoto. Brianna Palencia plays Hideyoshi Kinoshita. And Yuko Kinoshita. Greg Ayers, the legendary Greg Ayers, plays Kota Tsuchiya. Jamie Marchi plays Shoko Kimishima. Wendy Powell plays the principal Karu Tora. Kent Williams plays the Iron Man teacher Shoichi Nishimura. And Carly Mercier plays Akira Yoshi, Akihisa's older sister. Synopsis. The story centers around a boy named Akihisha Yoshi, who's also known as the idiot, or the baka of the title of the story. He attends Fumizuki Academy, a school where the staff rigidly divides students based off the results of their academic scores. At the start of the school, the students are academically sorted by entrance exams, test grades. The higher the grades, the higher the class, and the better the benefits. In this case, Class A is filled with high-scoring students, therefore their classroom is filled with many prestigious items like air conditioners, fancy seats, laptops, and a free snack bar. Which wouldn't fly in this country, but that's besides the point. But while the state of the Class F is the complete opposite of that representing the bottom of the barrel in an enemy such as mats, wooden tables, or in Class F's case, cardboard boxes as desks. The Academy is something special where all the students manage to call forth summoned beasts, also known as Shokanju, or Avatars. These beings are used to battle for the classes with the goals of capturing and retaining the best classroom facilities. Since Class A is filled with prodigies, they all have strong summon beings, while Class F has drastically weaker ones in comparison. Teachers must authorize supervise each battle, and the health and strength of each summon being is based off the student's last test score in that teacher's subject, i.e. math and history. The being lose points when struck by opponents, and should the point counter reach zero, the being and student are disqualified and must take a supplementary tutorition or remedial course with the strict remedial teacher Nishimaru, as I said, nicknamed the Iron Man. However, if the students can leave the battle before reaching zero, these points can be replenished by taking supplementary recovery exams. The student's being may then return to the battle. On the day of the placement test, an intelligent girl named Mizuki Himeji suffers from a fever and is unable to complete her test, hence her retaining a score of zero. As a result, she is pigeonholed into Class F together with Akahishi Yoshi. Akahishi, who dreams of the day when the academy will no longer be divided by grades, pitches an idea to his class to rule over the higher levels classes by doing some or being wars for both Mizuki's sake and to get more and more privileges. Aside from Mizuki, who happens to be the second-ranked student in Year 2, when she can actually take the test, there's also the class representative Yuji Sakamoto, the Shishonin Hideyoshi Kinoshita, the perverted Kota Tsuchiya, and the tomboyish Minami Shimura, who, as Akihisha claims, is his worst enemy, but actually has a crush on him, but is reluctant to show it. And that is the basic plot of Baka and Test. They just go through the, and it's filled with them going through summoning battles and using their avatars to summon beasts. So, with that being said, we're going to get right into our review when we come back of Baka and Test. Summon the Beast! Thing we're going to talk about is Baka and Test opening and closing. These are very good. You know, both accomplish exactly what they need to do as far as opening and closings. I actually like the closing theme better than the opening theme. We'll get to that in a second. But the opening theme, yeah, I don't want to use standard, but at the same point, because it is a very, very good song. But yeah, it's your standard sort of J-pop opening song. And I don't say that in sort of a bad thing. In this case, it's a very good song. It matches sort of the feel. And the song itself has sort of the comedy sort of stylings that you'll see throughout the series within it. It I think it really does a good job of representing exactly what the anime is, and it gets you, to an extent, excited for this harem comedy series. I mean, it's got a really good melody. I'm trying to think of sort of instruments I like. Da 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 da. Na 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 da 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 da. I mean, it's your standard J-pop, so I don't know if I can really talk about instruments, but you know, again, I just love the melody. I love sort of the way the notes are used and they fit together. And like I said, overall, I love how this song really, it has a comedic sense to it that really matches sort of the same comedic sense that you'll see in the show. Now, on to closing theme. I love this theme. I love sort of the pop rock theme. I don't know if that's really the proper way to say it, but it's sort of Beatles. I don't want to say Beatles-esque rock, but, you know, it's sort of a modern-day style. I'm trying to think of a Bowling for Soup, I think, would be maybe a good example of this, or a Blink-182. Would be a good example of a more modern band that this could be compared to. Not that they're exactly like that, but again, you know, just this very upbeat, up-tempo rock song. And again, I love the guitar solo. Because I am an absolute complete sucker for an awesome guitar solo. But, and mind you, I just love these sort of artwork that goes with the closing. It's absolutely incredible. But yeah, it's just an absolutely wonderful song. It's got a great melody, great kick to it. Yeah, just upbeat, up-tempo. You know what, for that matter, here, listen. See what I mean by, you know, having a very good tune there? You know, obviously putting this on was probably much better than me actually trying to hum it, but so I apologize for that. But yeah, like I said, just overall, both the opening and closing, very good. There is a second ending that's really used for one episode, and it's okay. Yeah, my only question is I don't have any understanding why it was put at that place. They didn't change the opening after that. It was just for that one episode. It's one of those where you have that special episode, and so there's a special ending with it. But, you know, I really didn't feel impressed by it all that much. But that's something to be forgiven, because it was really just a one-off. It didn't replace the ending. They went right back to the ending, which I love. On to the overall score. It's okay. It doesn't stand out. It's your standard type of, I mean, obviously, one of the reasons I'm sort of worried about using standard here is because it's standard, but it's not standard in like, oh, they just took it from somewhere else. They cater the music around the series and to where the music does seem particular to this series, but at the same point in time, it's not average, but it is sort of, you know, it's what you would expect from a sort of comedy harem series as far as music is concerned, especially music in the background, you know, when there's a sort of intense thinking scene or stuff like that. It's okay. It's not anything I would go out and get the soundtrack for, but it does what it's supposed to do. It sounds great. And while it doesn't enhance what you're seeing on screen, it fulfills its role by being sort of playful with the series and, you know, it's helping you to embrace, I think, the comedy that you see. You know, this really goes more towards the sound effects, which are absolutely awesome. But with that, we're going to move on and we're going to talk about animation right after a word from our sponsors.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back, and let's move on to animation. First, let's talk about the overall style of the show, and to a bit cartoonish, I mean, just sort of that classic sort of, really, yeah, that is the best way to put it, because I was about to say show, but it's not shoujo, but it's that classic sort of harem anime style. You know, I think back to things like Love, not, because it doesn't look like Kanakamatsu stuff, but I mean, as far as the use of bright colors and everything, and just sort of the playful and very, a lot of times, cartoony. I'm reminded of Full Metal Panic. It's probably the best way I can put it, with the art style. You know, but a little bit brighter, a little bit different. But yeah, I'm definitely reminded of things, you know, a lot of the classic ADV sort of harem stuff that came out during that time. Definitely a harken back to sort of the classic artistic styles that you saw in the mid-thousands from all those harem series that were just great. Like, and, you know, shows like Full Metal Panic, and for that matter, Full Metal Panic Shumofu, definitely very similar, you know, as far as comedic aspects, and definitely, for that matter, art style. The only difference is this series being a lot more brighter due to certain things. You know, things like being a harem, just being in school and everything like that. But in overall, yeah, I love it. It's just nice and clean, and it's... The art doesn't try to be anything it isn't, you know? There are times where you'll watch a series to where the art, you know, the artist is trying to be something he's not. And here, it, you know, really feel the artist's style is just beautiful, and it tries to be exactly what he knows he is. Just, there's a playfulness to it, a comedic sense to it that I very much enjoy. With that, let's move on to character designs. And let's move on to first our main character, Akahisha Yoshi, who I'll say this. The thing I love most about his design is he's exactly what he says he is in the title, or what the title says he is. He's a baka. He's an idiot. You know, everything about his design makes you think, God, this guy's an idiot. Not that he looks dumb or that he, you know, or acts... Well, more he acts dumb, but we'll get to that more. But it just gives you a sense of this guy who's just... It's that classic sort of baka design, to put it in a way. With that, let's move on to Mizuki Himeji. And, well, let's go down our checklist, shall we? We have a comedy harem series. A bright one. So let's go down the checklist for harem girl number one, shall we? Bright and perky personality? Check! Since she has a bright and perky personality, does she have big hair with that has a bright color, like pink or sort of bright red or something like that? Oh, check out! let's see. Does she have big, gigantrian, humongous tatas. Tatas. To quote Peanut. Double check. Well, they're not the biggest in the series, but as far as the classic is concerned, yep, they are the biggest. That I think we have classic harem girl number one right here. With that being said, while it is sort of that, you know, hits all those checklist points, the thing I like is that the artist does make her his own. And you know, she has a unique style. You know, just the wavy pink hair. I mean, it is everything of a standard sort of harem love interest number one. But at the same point in time, it just feels completely unique at the same time. And that's something very interesting that they do with all the character designs. You know, like I said, it knows what it is. It knows it's a harem series. It doesn't try to be anything. And again, we'll talk more about this in story when we go into sort of comedy and that stuff. But at the same point in time, they are able to make themselves feel unique onto themselves, which is a great thing to do. Moving on to Minami Shimada. Yes, we have to get the chickos out again, because here's harem love interest number two. Come on down. Let's see, go down the old checklist. Let's see, love interest number two, darker colored hair, yet still bright, check. Tsunade, check. Flat as a washboard, check. I mean, what... The first two love interests, again, it's very standard to an extent harem love interest character designs. But again, and I love how they make them own. A lot of that comes from acting and personality, which we'll get to later. Let's move on to Shuji Sakamoto. And I love his character designs. Just instantly seeing his character design and the way his character holds himself throughout the series definitely is someone who... You know, feels like he's smarter than his tests give him credit for. You know, and considering what happens in the series, he definitely is smarter in the way his ability to strategize. It's just his laid-back personality, which I can understand sometimes betrays him as far as getting an answer right. Like, oops. Well, nothing we can do now. Again, that's more in the story. We'll get into that later. But I love his design. I love sort of having that. His hair color helps him stand out with it being red and sort of pointy like that. And I very much like that. The Kinoshita twins, which is what they are, one being a boy, one being a girl. It's just an interesting. I think the thing that helped makes Hideo Yoshi's sort of running gag joke, which we'll get to later, work so much. The running gag joke is that everybody constantly confuses him as a girl, and he's constantly in girls' clothing. I think the thing that makes it work is that he looks more feminine than his sister. You know, Yuko, while looking like a girl, you know, has sort of a bit of a masculine quality of her character design, where Hideki is more feminine in his design. And that sort of helps towards that whole joke. And I very much like it. It makes me appreciate their character design more. Kota Tsuchiya. The classic pervert. And it's everything you want in sort of that classic pervert design. The very creepy hair dangling over sort of one eye and everything. And looking like a creepy guy. You know, that it helped make you laugh. And I like it. Shoko Kimishima. I love the fact that they took what would usually be, the third sort of hair and love interest design. And gave it to a character that's not going to be a love interest for Akihisha at all. You know, she's the love interest for Yuji. And they take sort of that substandard sort of design that would be for a very subdued and sort of shy girl. And they give it to just a whacked out crazy girl. I mean, she's shy, but you know, as we'll get to in comedy, someone who just pulled a taser out of somewhere and just tased somebody for no reason. Akira Yoshi, you know, Akihidachi's sister. I can't help but look at this design like, oh wow, they went with sort of the classic H anime sister incest design. Which is, I feel is a horrible thing to say, but again, big boobs and everything, and it's like, wow. They really went there. Not that they show, by the way, they show anything bad, mind you, but again, it's, as we're getting into comedy, but again, yeah. It's like, wow, they went there, didn't they? But, you know, it's a nice design. I like the short hair. You know, I love the fact that it is such a drastic contrast from Akishita. So that is something I definitely love about her character design. As for the others and the teachers, really none of them stand. They're good designs. None of them stand out except for Nishimura, who, being that Iron Man, I just love how he constantly seems like he's just pissed off at the world. That's what I love about his character design the most. He looks like, you know what? I'm pissed off enough as it is. You don't want to piss me off more. On the special effects and backgrounds, and they're pretty substandard for an anime. You know, they're okay. They're nothing spectacular as far as the backgrounds are concerned. Special effects are done really, really well. There's a lot of clouds. But clouds and, you know, smoke and that stuff. The special effects are very cartoony, and I think that helps the series very, very much. I love sort of the cartoony special effects. You know, it just helps you embrace this sort of comedic show. With that, we're going to move on to acting. And as we move on to acting, we really only have one point. There really ain't, because really ain't is a word, but there really isn't. Correcting my grammar on a live podcast is awesome. Thank you, Randy Orton. But there really isn't any antagonist in this show. There's people that are against them, but they're not bad. There's, again, it's a comedy show. There's no real evil people. There's just, there's characters. And sometimes they, you know, are going against each other. You know, being that Shoko and Yuko are in Class A, you know, and the others are in Class F, they're constantly fighting against each other. I don't have, actually, let me look it up because trying to remember the character's name. There's really only one character that seems like a antagonist, and that's I have it right here, Koji Nemoto, who is the representative for Class B. He's constantly trying to steal the answers for the test to try to get into Class A, but he gets caught, and Class F eventually defeats him and makes him wear a dress, which leads to him being dumped. He was voiced by Tom Hapicorn, who did a wonderful, wonderful job at portraying this guy that you're glad to see get his comeuppance at the end. But let's go more towards our main cast. Again, like I said, so mostly all of them are protagonists. Our main character is played by Josh Grell. I love his work here. He did a wonderful job just portraying the idiot and just the quirks he puts into the character. You know, of jumping to, and it is with story as well, but at the same point in time, he does a great job bringing all those quirks and the jumping to conclusions and just the absolutely idiocy, of his character, you know, so well in life. He does a wonderful, wonderful job playing Akihisha. Just many, many funny scenes with him in there. Alexis Tipton, she is really a rising star in the voice acting industry, as far as I see it, because my real first introduction to her work is in a series we'll be reviewing next week. And, you know, I've seen her more and more, and she just does a wonderful, wonderful... She plays sort of the high pitch very, very well. And, you know what? Looking at it, it's the perfect voice for Mizuki. And, you know, she does a just great job of portraying this like, wonderful, caring person that, you know, has developed these feelings for Akihisha. You know, I think she does a wonderful job at doing that. Leia Clark plays Minami. It's glad to hear Leia Clark do more of a feminine voice. You know, there are times here and there where she'll do maybe a more masculine voice. Again, a good example of this is a series we will be reviewing next week. I'm giving you clues, people, to what we're reviewing next week. I wonder if you can figure it out. If you know your voice actors, you might. In fact, let's see. Our voice actors, Josh Grell, Alexis Tipton, Leia Clark, Jamie Marchi, are all in next week's review. But we'll get to that later. But Leia Clark, she does a great job playing the Tsunade. Wonderful job by her doing that. Scott Freeman is probably my favorite voice in here. Just the quirks he puts in when he's being electrocuted by Shoko. Or like, my eyes! My eyes! he does such a wonderful job bringing, you know, a sense of intelligence and yet a sense of idiocy at the same point in time to the character. And that was just so wonderful to do. Brianna Palencia, I just have to tip my hat to her pulling double duty, though we don't see much of Yuko. But Hideki Yoshi, playing this character who is this boy, who's constantly confused as a girl, you know, and to the point that even though he's trying to get people to understand he's a boy, is constantly picking out female dresses. Wonderful to just the way she plays him serious really adds to the comedy. That's really the secret to that role is that You don't play it comedic. You play it serious. And, you know, that's the beauty of his comedy, is that he comes off as serious, and that's a wonderful job by Brianna. Moving on to Koto, we have Greg Ayers. Like I said, the legendary Greg Ayers. It's always wonderful to hear him continue to do work, because Greg Ayers has one of the best voices in the industry. He does a wonderful... I mean, even though a lot of times he is playing the same roles, you know, it's like... it's like getting Derek Jeter to play shortstop, you know, on any team. You know, he knows how to play one role, but he plays it so good that he can be in on any team and play that role and be an all-star. It's the same thing here. Greg Ayers has certain roles that he's very, very good at. And you can just plug him into that voice, and he makes that character a star. And he does it again here with Kota. You know, just... It's one of those things where you could tell Greg Ayers was having fun with this character. You can just hear the excitement and just the joy in his voice, you know, getting to portray this character. And that was wonderful to hear. Moving on to Jamie March, who played Shoka Kimishima, who was Yuji's love interest. Again, the ability to play this, what is usually the classic shy girl, and make her this nutcase. Wonderful, wonderful job. And mind you, it'll be a great reference. Again, I'm referencing next week's review. But, you know, her character next week is a completely different, on the other end of the spectrum, as far as the character she plays here. And watching this series, being that I've seen that series that we're reviewing next week before, it's a great sort of sense of reference to her range as an actor. So that is something I came to appreciate and listen to her work here. But, just, you know, sort of the deadpan, sort of shy voice that she lends to Shoko just makes the comedy of the character work absolutely. Carly Russell plays sort of the creepy sister that kind of don't... She does a great job as that. And the others do really well. Kent Williams as Nishimura. You know, he did a wonderful job playing the teacher. It just made that character's own, made it funny in its own way of constantly hearing him say the same thing. So he did a good job of lending that voice. With that, we're going to take a quick break and hear another sponsor. And when we come back, we're going to get into story.
In June of 1962, a superhero unlike any other made his first appearance in the pages of Amazing Fantasy number 15, the final issue of that series. 6 months later, this character would receive his own title, and from there he would grow in popularity and be adapted into several animated series, a handful of live-action series, both in the U.S. and abroad, have countless action figures made in his likeness, dominate the cinema screen, and much, much more. It is fair to say that the Amazing Spider-Man is a pop culture icon and a fictional character that people all over the world identify with and love. This year, Spider-Man is turning 50, and Views from the Long Box, an internet radio series hosted by me, Michael Bailey, is going to celebrate the wall crawler in a series of episodes focusing on various aspects of the character's existence. Together with such podcasting luminaries as Brad Douglas, Andrew Leyland, John Wilson, and Scott Gardner, I'm going to give Spidey the biggest birthday card a comic fan could. He may not be my favorite character, but I like him a great deal, and he deserves the spotlight in this, his 50th year. Views from the Long Box can be found at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. New episodes hit every Friday. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Bailey Toot production in association with the DiMonzo Corps of Milan, Italy.
And welcome back, and let's get into story. And first, let's talk about the overall plot. Again, This is a comedy harem series. I don't want to call it etchy because it's not etchy like what you might see in Ikitosen, you know, or any of that stuff. Not even BH Gato, which is, you know, kind of subdued. I mean, there are some fan service stuff, but it's not like, ooh, it's really close to being naked and you're going to see a titty. But at the same point, I guess it is, but it's sort of that very, very soft etchy. You know, it's played completely for comedic references. But again, it's a comedic harem series. With that being said, just the overall plot of these classes that are battling with each other. I love how they're able to integrate sort of this plot that can be taken very serious and be put in a very serious story, and yet make it just this completely comedic plot, which is absolutely hilarious. The absurdity that ensues in these battles and everything. But at the same point in time, they also still have performing strategy. You know, like I said, they show Yuji is a pretty damn good strategist. And, you know, he's able to have Class F, a class that is very weak, able to defeat the other classes. You know, even Class A, even though Class A won the big battle that they had in the second to last episode, you know, really, they were beating him. And if it hadn't been for, you know, the collapse of the building, you know, they would have won. And it was obvious to everyone. But, one thing I do also love as far as the overall plot is concerned is that really this story moves forward in two places. One is like the first, I want to say, 4 episodes. I mean, really, just I would say the difference between plot and filler issue, which again, it enhances character development, the filler issues do. Or episodes, excuse me. And, you know, just sort of a good ratio. It's really half and half. Half of the 13 episodes move the plot forward, and the other half are filler issues that go into the characters. And it just sets up a good pace for the plot, I think. And it gives you enough, you know, sometimes that's my biggest issue with some series that are, you know, especially that are harem and comedies, that you're not given enough time to appreciate sort of the current social status, the current status of the people, and you're just enjoying a good time of being around them and seeing their hijinks. And they give you enough time to enjoy that, and yet they don't, it doesn't detract from the story. So I love that as far as the plot is concerned. And then the filler episodes, you know, everyone was focused on a different issue. They all were very funny, and they all really helped the character development of whichever character they were focused on. And, you know, the main story moved along at a very good pace. At the same point in time, again, it's, there's a plot, but it's not a plot to where, oh my god, is this serious thing that's happening. It's them trying to be better in school and trying to get better anemones and that stuff. You know, the overall theme is, you know, it doesn't matter where you are, where you come from, or for this matter, what class you're in. It's a matter of the effort you put in. It's really the overall lesson. Not that they're trying to teach a lesson, but the overall lesson that's getting taught here. But let's talk about the comedy and the fan service. And again, when I'm talking about fan service, I'm, again, not just talking about ecchi fan service. They have fan service as far as references to anime and references to all types of things. Science fiction, you know, they reference Code Geass, Evangelion, Detective Conan, they reference Ultraman and the Toshin series and Godzilla and all of that stuff. And it's, they're all wonderful jokes. And it's that, oh man, it's sort of that Captain America and the Avengers, like, oh, I got that joke. Oh, I got that joke. I got that joke. But just the absurdity, it really is that thing of like, okay, we all know what would be the normal thing to say in this situation, but because they're idiots, they're going to say the exact opposite. And just like, oh my god, I can't believe they said that. And it just, The comedy is so wonderful. It makes me laugh. It's just very, very enjoyable. And the fan service, there's, especially the ecchi fan service, it's never over the top. And that's the one thing I'll say about the ecchi fan service, is that there is some there, but it's never, never over the top. And the thing I like about how this is that it really endears you to the characters, and it really helps their character development. You know, again, I was talking about a filler episode earlier, or I was talking about filler episodes earlier, and one of the filler episodes, again, you know, they had this whole thing where Shoka, you know, basically has a crush and wants to marry Yuji as soon as possible, so they have him go on a field trip to an amusement park where they're supposed to have a faux pas marriage and everybody's in on it. And Yuji's trying to get out of it, but at the end of the episode, you know, everything that happens, there's this genuine moment that leads to this character development, sort of the feelings that Yuji and Shoto have for each other. And I very much appreciate that. And that's what the comedy all leads to, is, yeah, they have their funny moments, but by the end of the episode, there are genuine moments between the characters. And it really helps the character development, and it really helps you endear to the characters. But again, going back to comedy, the other thing I like about it is I love that they have so many running gags. I am a person, I love running gags. And my two favorite, the constant mix-up of Hideyoshi's gender, but the one I love most is the Taika reform joke. The first two episodes are all set up around that, and later on in the episode, they bring it back for a question, and then the very last question that episode wins, it's like, oh my god, I forgot. It's like, how could you forget it? We've covered it 10,000 times! He's an absolute idiot. And it's perfect timing on the joke. And, you know, they have other constant running it, you know, the burning of porn magazines by Hibji and Shibata. when they find Akihisa's, you know, magazines. It just makes me laugh. So yeah, the comedy is there, and it's very, very well done. I talked about it earlier, but the pace of the series, I can't talk enough about this. I just think the pace was so on the ball. And when you have good pace in a series, you can have a series that isn't necessarily have, you know, you always want a good story, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a great story. It can turn a good story into a great story, and bad pace can turn a great story into a bad story. And here you had a very, very good pace that really helped the series. Like I said, half and half as far as main storyline episodes and filler episodes, but in the episodes themselves, it felt completely natural. Everything flowed organically, and no episode felt rushed, which was very, very much appreciative. The last point I think I'll talk about is, again, the 2010 anime season. And this is one of those animes that came out as a year of 2010 that I really felt it could be on TV. I can imagine this on Cartoon Network. You know, maybe put it at 10 on Adult Swim. I can imagine this on other channels and being successful. It just needs to be given a chance. But again, it goes back to the point, like, this, that whole year, that year of 2010, you had Hero Man, which was the anime of the year, as you guys already know, I've told you about. But just all these animes that came out, and it's really reversed the course for where anime has been going. And it's changed it from the dark brooding, you know, pandering to the yaoi fangirl hipsters and dorm room douchebag hipsters that have entered the anime fandom and only been a fan for, as of 2009, they were only a fan for like 3 years, and they hadn't paid, I don't even want to say haven't paid their dues, but they're pandering and having the shows really be targeted at them and what they want, rather than, you know, these animes trying to be good shows. And, you know, this whole year really changed that course, and we've had 3 good years of anime. I mean, 2012 has been okay so far, and it's had some good stuff. I mean, we've only had two seasons come out so far. The winter and the spring. But like I said, 2010 was absolutely spectacular. So much good stuff that can be put on TV came out. And in 2011, well, not as good as 2010, but it wasn't horrible. It was a great copumentary year to follow and brought so many good stuff like Tiger and Bunny and Sacred Seven and a Blue Exorcist. And just some other great stuff that came out of that year. So, absolutely, you know, there's a lot of stuff coming from Funimation that they're releasing the past, past year that they've been releasing that's come from 2010. Things like this, Cat Ear Beauties, which is a wonderful anime I may review in the summer. Sakurai Pure Engagement. Again, another clue. I just told you. And of course, same with Sentai 23, you know, Infinite Stratos, which actually came out in 2011. But Samurai Girls, Orimo, you know, all this stuff that's coming out from 2010 that are selling really, really well, and it shows you how good 2010 was. So overall, Bakken the Test, Summon the Beast is a very, very good classic comedy harem series. It's a wonderful Japanese anime. It will make you laugh. You can view it on Netflix right now. It's well worth it. You can also view it on Hulu, though primarily only subbed, but you can see the dub on Netflix. It's a wonderful show. I highly suggest checking it out. It's 13 episodes, and it's a good 13 episodes to watch. So the only criticism I think I can find of it is that while it's good and it's very enjoyable, it's still missing that top thing to make it just stand out as like this is in that top class of harem and stuff like that. So overall rating, 4 out of 5 for me. So that's it for this review of Tom's Prerogative. Remember, if you have any comments, any suggestions, any mail, or anything you want to send to the show, you can send it first by email at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by searching Absolution Network out on Facebook. And, of course, you can leave a comment on the site, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, remember to check out all the other 132 production sites. Random Red Box Reviews by Chris and Gene. Of course, Otaku Momentum, which is here on the Absolution Network. And of course, don't forget Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast where I review every Godzilla movie ever made. You can find that on www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, my comic book crazy site, which has just been releasing tons of stuff and it's just on pace. You'll find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, that's where my comic book crazy podcast, which has my free comic book day coming out. You know, I have Hexcast and the comic book pitch all on that podcasting site. Remember to check out all our friends that you can find on the sidebar of the site. You know, they do wonderful stuff, and really check them out. People like Michael Bailey's Views from Wallbox, which has new episodes out right now. And, of course, From Crisis to Crisis, that he does with his friend Jeffrey Taylor. Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Seifert's Major Spoilers Podcast, and Scott Gardner's 2 True Freaks. All the wonderful podcasts, along with all the others that are on the sidebar, check them out. They're really worth it. On next week's episode, if you didn't get the clues, especially since the last clue I basically told you, the next 2 weeks, we will be diving into the wonderful harem comedy series, Sekiri, in next week with Sekiri, and the week after that with Sekiri Per Engagement. I very much enjoyed the shows. I can't wait to review them. Here is the future outlook. I'm going to be reviewing those two, and then I'm going to be taking a 3-week break from podcasting in general. Part of the reason for this is I am going to several conventions, or at least I hope I'll be going to several conventions. I know the first one I'll be going to is on the first week of June, and that is Wizard World Philly. I will be at Wizard World in Philadelphia. Hopefully I'll get to talk with Stanley. I hope. And, you know, I'll be interviewing tons of people and doing stuff for the site there. And then the week after that, the very next week, is Anime Now, which is an anime convention in New Jersey. So I'll be doing that stuff. So I need to take a break so I can focus on questions and doing stuff for that site. And that way I'll have some content for you coming out end of June and July as far as convention coverage. Though you can look forward to maybe convention reports as far as overall review of the convention after I go to them. And then in July, we're probably going to dive into hopefully some more Funimation stuff. You know, I don't know what it is, but definitely some anime. Looking to possibly do Ikitosen review. If it comes out on Netflix, I might do Cat Eater Beauties. It fits perfectly with the summer theme. But outside of that, that's the overall future outlook for right now. So that's it for this episode of Tom Seragadu. Until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
Accursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort, but I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
By DJ Clark Nova. Don't sleep on it.